Okay, since we're short on time, I'm going to go through this pretty quick. A brief history on how PM got started. About 10 years ago, Mr. Ucrops, a Richmond, Virginia retailer and a cattle person, happened to meet at a soccer game in Richmond, Virginia, complaining about the quality and the lack of consistency in the meat he had in the meat case. They got their heads together, started identifying some cattle, bringing them through, eventually bought packing plants, and are off and going. Ucrops is still a partner. That's not going to work. Go ahead. Because we're involved with the retailer, we had access to what their customers, the consumers, wanted, and using that to help set the tone for what this company did. The first thing they looked at in that survey that they identified at the top of that list was food safety. And to a consumer, food safety means all those different things. Also, towards the top of the list was quality. But the consumers don't look at quality the same way the people in this room do it. To them, it doesn't have anything to do with marbling or yield grade. It has to do with how the meat looks in the meat case, the color of it, the taste, the tenderness, all those kind of things. So, as you concentrate on those kind of traits, it takes a different type of system than a commodity packing plant to be able to deliver those. One thing you had to know is where the cattle came from. And once you knew that, they decided they had to put some kind of a system together that was able to monitor different checkpoints, and that's what the process verification is. It wasn't something that PM did just by itself. They involved people from the universities, people from the industry, to help identify what those critical points were that they need to address to bring that eating experience to the consumer. And so what they concentrated on, they market the meat as all natural, not that it hasn't had implants or any of those kind of things, but the fact is it's residue tested for 360 some compounds, source verified, guaranteed tender, product appearance, good yields, and very safety conscious. The source verification is actually the means to the end. It's not the ultimate. And I know there's a big discussion in the industry now about cool and that sort of thing. Cool is going to be a great tool, I imagine, but it's not going to be the means to the end. It's what is done with knowing the source beyond that point is what's going to bring value. And that predictable value, the consistency, is what the consumers are wanting, and the quality of the meat, and this keeps coming out more and more in other research trials, for example, with implants, and maybe it's not the feedlot implant that causes as much quality grade impact as it is the pasture implant and those kind of things. So anyway, those deals, the impacts on how that animal is going to eat happens before they get to the plant, for the most part. As PM set up the process verification, it's essentially a quality system, and it's a third party verified by USDA to verify that we're doing what we say we're going to do. As they set up the system, they eliminated certain breeds. They start feeding vitamin E. The feeding programs have some similarity. The follow BQA standards to eliminate vaccination problems. The animal's entire health history is documented. Animal age is limited. There's traceability of that animal all the way through the system. The product is aged before it gets to the store. and they're able to standardize the cutting with the carcass specs that we have set. Okay, as I mentioned, you establish the targets in the process verification program, and then the government comes in to see if we actually meet them. We measure against the target. The system works together to where the producers, from the producers to the retailer, information is shared back and forth to try and make it a better system. And you have to take action if something happens to do preventative methods. Okay, here's how the meat and new crops is marketed. PM doesn't ever show up on the label. It is marketed under that store's own name as their own beef. Okay. And sometimes it's hard to describe whether PM's a niche or not. If it's small, PM's a small packer killing 700-800 head a day. But I'm not sure that what we're doing with U-Crops and Heinen's is necessarily a niche deal, because instead of a meat case where you have a commodity cooler, so to speak, or commodity display that's many feet long, and the branded program is about as wide as this podium, it's not that way in those two stores. We have the entire meat counter. That's what they're selling. And I know you can't see that, but here they're talking about, that's a piece of information they have on display at the store, and they're talking about the consumer picks the meat, so they pick the cattle, they pick the producers. We're essentially an agent for them, working from the consumer back to the producer. Here's just a piece of information that the store produced in their little magazine at Heinen's, that talks about the source, and they went out and interviewed one of the PM ranchers. Okay, now we're into the part that's going to start having an impact, or that has an impact directly on producers. And that's what these trends mean to you. One is increased accountability for food safety and everything. A guy can go on and on about the importance of that, but it just can never be minimized. Increased technology. We're using electronic ear tags. We have a online web-based database that the producers enter their information and also get their information back. We use DNA. Each carcass is DNA sampled by Genetic Solutions and stored so that we can trace back. And that's also available for producers to use to be able to identify bulls in a multi-bull pasture breeding situation. You have to watch out for outliers. For whatever program you're in, whatever marketing system you're under, the key thing is to find the animals that aren't fitting and either change them or do something different with them. You're going to get a lot of information back, and you're going to get more and more information back as time goes. Don't just stack it up somewhere. Find somebody that can help you understand what it means and take that information, that data, and turn it into something you can make some money with. You need to know what all the segments of the industry are doing. I went to a cool listening session in Kansas City here a month or so ago, and I'm probably, like the people here on the panel, we're represented today as packers, but I don't feel like a packer. And I haven't been for very long. But it was also disturbing to me when those people that were pro-cool spent three-fourths of their three-minute tirade beating up on packers. They don't have the foggy. A rancher that sells his calves at the sale barn every year has no idea what happens in the rest of the industry. You have to know what's going on. And then finally, you got to find where you fit, do the things you got to do to fit there, follow BQA type thing. We feel like quality grade or yield grade in particularly doesn't cut it. You have to go deeper than that. And I'll show you an example here in a second. But what we're recommending, and this is partly what we are doing now with our program and partly trying to look ahead for the next 5 or 10 years. So some of these specs up here are slightly narrowed from what they are right now. But it's where we feel like we would like to go. And if you produce an animal that fits this program, that has some muscle and yet some marbling, you're going to fit anywhere. Nobody's going to refuse that. So a British Continental Cross, a finished weight of 1,200 to 1,300 pounds, heavy muscle. Now, when I say less bone, people don't talk much about that, but that stuff doesn't sell. That doesn't bring $9 in the meat counter like your steaks will. So that's something that, without compromising the animal and its ability to be mobile and exist in your environment, pay a little bit of attention to that. For our program and for essentially most people in the industry will say if they can make high select, low choice, you're going to have a good product. We want less than 4/10 of back fat. We don't want any standards. We don't want a ribeye less than 12 inches or larger than 16. We don't want a carcass under 700 pounds or one under over 900. Now, those aren't the specs. That's not the window we're at right now in the PM program. That's just where it's probably going to head to. Having the same, having peas in a pod, and be able to document where they came from and what's happened to them during their life, and to have them be under 18 months of age. Until last week, I thought that the reason PM put 18 months of age into the requirements, because now it's actually their requirement is 24. Most cattle come in way under that. The reason that was put in, I thought, was for tenderness, for, you know, eating the young animal. Part of the reason it's in there was food safety. BSC had not been found in an animal anywhere under 24 months of age. That's one reason it's in there. Okay, I told you that we talk about a little bit about why yield grade may not work completely. Had some data from a few years back, and this is not a lot of data, but as I searched to try and find two very similar animals to be able to show differences, it narrowed the field down. Actually, in real life, this difference is going to be way more than $85. Took two carcasses weighing essentially the same, both yield grade 2 selects. And by the time you follow them through FAB, there's that much difference. Here's what those carcasses were. You know, hardly any difference in weight. There was a couple inches difference in ribeye. The one that had the higher, bigger ribeye had a little less back fat. But there was 3% more sellable product out of the animal that had larger ribeye. And 7 pounds less bone and et cetera, the throwaway. That's where that difference came from. That's where the $85 came from. Essentially, it's red meat yield. Okay, to wrap it up, essentially, the same things we talked about before. And I never have worked an extension, but there is a good theory that you have to hear things more than once or see things more than once to absorb. So once again, the 1,200 to 1,300 pound extension, pound finish weight. Speaking of extension, am I doing okay on time? Okay. Yesterday, what we do when we make those claims and do those things to the animals, to the carcasses, and the USDA comes in and audits it, it allows those retailers to make claims. They can claim things in the store. They can claim things to their consumers, to their customers, that they can't just do with commodity. And so I got to thinking about the claims and things that people make and truth and honesty and And because I have to be truthful up here today, I can't just blow smoke because there's two or three customers that send cattle to PM in the room, so I got to shoot straight. But that didn't happen yesterday at noon, I don't think. If you were there to luncheon and Twig Marston got up towards after the meal and he mentioned something about he'd blown his Atkins diet by eating his dessert, well, I think there's not truth in advertising there because, as you guys know Twig, him and Dr. Atkins, I don't think, have been in the same planet before. Or he just went on it. Anyway, heavy muscle, less bone, high select, low choice, less than 4 inches of 4/10 of back fat, no standards, ribeyes between 12 and 16, back fat, nothing greater than 6/10. No carcasses between or outside of 700 to 900 pounds. And then documented source and process, what's happened to them, where did they come from, under 18 months of age. Okay, what does that mean in dollars? I mentioned a little bit about the difference in box beef yield. And by the way, PM intends to be able to pay for cattle in a couple of years based on box beef yield with the changes they've made at their plant. But in today's world, with our grid now, if you produce an 825-pound carcass with 3/10 of back fat, 15-inch ribeye, if it made low choice, okay, I said in today's world, but not exactly, I use the year's average select choice spread of $8. I don't want to inflate what a choice value is right now when it's up near $20. So I use $8 for a year's average. $93 premium that animal would bring on top of the market. Okay, if that animal was select, same $8 choice select spread, it would bring $54. So there's money there for the producer if they hit the target. Thank you.